So we have four fun things for you to do today. We're going to have a talk with Paul Irvin about the instruments, and we're going to have some recital on the clavichord with poetry from Carol Lay and her husband Michael. And we're going to have another talk from Carol Lay on the singing style of playing that was so admired at the time. And in between, we have some additional instruments around the room for you to try. And please take advantage of that. This is the recital instrument, so we won't be using it before the recital. Keep the tuning just as it should be. But after the recital, you can try it. So here, here, and here. We also have some used books and scores that have been donated to us. So that's a fundraiser. And there's a couple of these notebooks here, which give some information about the clavichord that you could look at if you like. And I think that about covers it. There will be some refreshments outside. Do not bring anything into this room. And the other thing to draw your attention to is our spring events on the bottom of the first page of the program. We'll have Portlander Elizabeth Wright coming in March and our spring soiree in May. And does anyone not have a program? To the instrument itself is Paul Irvin, and he has a very long career in building harpsichords and clavichords, refurbishing and servicing and so on. Was previously in the Chicago area and now lives here. He also maintains the reed instrument, so he will inform us. Welcome, Paul.
Okay, I'll try to keep it really brief so it doesn't get into any area that gets too much right for this, but
just a Paul.
Yes.
I was going to mention that if you turn the page in your program to page 2, this is Paul's handout. And we will get to follow some of his comments.
Read that. Okay. The I've built about 17 clavichords or so, 68 all instruments together, harpsichords and so on, 17. Two are in this room now, so, and it spans about 34 years back. But esoteric, right? Arcane, unusual, strange, weird, so quiet, etc., etc., for clavichords. It goes back to at least the very earliest written mention of clavichord. It's about 1410. Okay, so it goes well back in Western European history for that, and this probably existed before that came up. There's also carved statue in a church in Mengen, Germany in 1425. So they were around, they were being used for quite some time in other countries. One of the various earliest documents which I found amusing or whatever, or ironic perhaps in the 1400s also, was a princess writing to her friend complaining about how her clavichord builder was late with the instrument. This is a tradition that has carried through for centuries. So, embarrassingly so, but I think we're just too optimistic and too hopeful and that thing. But it was so much forgiving when I read that 600 years ago they were still doing that or started doing that. Now, the clavichord was found throughout Europe from the 15th century, 1400s, 1500s, all the way through, and it's a progression. It's how it was used, a progression of how it was designed, and how it became more suitable, more fitting, and more expressive. And I'm not going to say that the very first clavichord that was built, maybe 13-something, was the first expressive keyboard instrument, but it was on its way. It started on its way there. The lute and the clavichord are the most common instruments to be found in the Low Countries in the 15th century. There's even a written record of a prince having one in his chapel to be played during Mass. You can imagine that. And there are also an interesting thing with the Dutch hotels that provided in the rooms of their guests clavichords so they could practice their music quietly. This is back in the 1400s and 1500s. So I don't think they're doing that anymore. And for the French inventories at the same time, very early period, 1400s, 1500s, the spinet, which is any plucked, we call a harpsichord now, spinet and the clavichord were the most common instruments there in all the inventories that you come across. The English royalties, various kings and nobility owned them. Italians, it pops up the same way, ubiquitous throughout the country. German countries, definitely yes. So it was a common keyboard instrument. And considering its size and the time it takes to build one versus the harpsichords, it was probably the common keyboard instrument for people to learn and practice on. Okay, and that was its main purpose. Keyboard music at that time is pretty much generic. If you had a keyboard, this is what you played on. Okay, we had to split up into different styles or types of keyboards yet at that time. We'll work into that here. King Ferdinand of Spain, remember him? Okay, he owned them. Other nobility and middle-class families in Spain owned them. And by the beginning of the 16th century in Portugal, there were 12 clavichord builders working in Lisbon. Okay, compared to, we don't have 12 in the United States now for this. So they were all over the place, and it was a common, even though it's not now, because they served a purpose. And to a certain extent, without getting people too upset, the early instruments did serve the purpose. Like I said, but it's from our area now, it's the early ones are more of the Casio keyboards of the period, right? They're inexpensive, easy to take care of, okay? You want to play something, go over, you play on it, you're done. You didn't disturb the family or anybody else, it was fine. No earplugs to stick in to do it, but it was quiet enough on its own for that. So that was the role. The design actually has a fair number of things in common with an instrument I'm sure most of you are much more familiar with, like this. And this. What's that?
It's an octave.
Good, right, it's an octave. How did I get that octave? I'm playing the same string.
Fret.
Right? I'm pushing down my finger there and fretting it, okay? I can go. So you can have one string and play many different notes with it, okay, depending upon what length the string is plucked at or struck at, okay? That's an important thing that we'll have appear of the clavichords too. Another one would be something like, if I can do it here. Okay, excuse me. I'm not a guitarist, obviously. Let's do it this way. Feature is also coming up, so it won't be so unusual related to here. The basic design was, somebody's probably familiar with the monochord, came up from the Greeks and also this. We have a string suspended across a couple of bridges, and by just doing what I did, they would have a movable bridge and divide the string, and they pluck it and go, oh, there's a 2-to-1 ratio for octaves, and there's a 4-to-5 ratio for this. They just divide the string by sliding another bridge along there. And this comes up, and it's often thought that the clavichord sort of developed from this idea. We have one string across, and depending upon where the bridge is or where it's plucked, you have different notes. In the case of clavichords, they don't pluck, okay? If they plucked, it would always be the same string all the time if they plucked. Same thing with the piano. If you hit a string, you can hit a piano string down low or up toward the other end and it still sounds the same pitch. What's different about the clavichord is when you push the key down, it comes up and this blade strikes the string and determines the length of the string that's going. So it's acting as a fret. This key comes up here for the very high note, comes down lower in the same string for the lower note. Okay, basic concept. So you can imagine having a soundboard across here, string suspended across it, where you can have one string, but then you can slide a keyboard in between that string and soundboard and have these things coming up in different places. You could play a whole octave of notes on it because you're hitting it and holding it. Now it's shorter, and as you move, play down the keyboard, or for you the other way, you have a longer string, so it sounds lower, okay? And so that's the idea of maybe how this started. But if I have one string and I can play 12 notes, 13 notes on it, that's great. But what can't I do as far as playing music on it?
Pull it apart.
Right, there's no harmony. You can't play two notes at the same time any better than you can play two notes in the same string and the guitar at the same time. Only the higher one will sound. So let's move it up a little bit. We'll put a few extra strings on and have maybe a half octave there and a half octave there for the string, so you can play some more things. But humans being the way they are, musicians particularly, not quite good enough. We want to get some more strings there, play some more notes. We started with fourths and fifths, but then we moved on to thirds more or less for our harmonies and so on. So, and that's what happened with the clavichord design. They put more strings on it so they could have, but they still fretted it for a long time. The major ones, 1500s, 1600s, were quadruple fretted and triple fretted. So you could play four different notes on one set of strings. But if you wanted to play something that was only three semitones apart or two semitones apart, it doesn't work, okay? And so eventually, you could guess where that led. So we had an instrument like this with one pair of strings for every note, okay, independence. But it's not a handicap at that time because it would be kind of silly to go making that many notes available when you never played minor thirds, or then you ever played seconds and so forth. Why put them in there? It made a much more compact instrument, much lighter, and so on, so much more economical, which has always been consideration for that. But another thing feature you're going to see in all these instruments too is if you have either the monochord or if you have that early one where we stuck a keyboard in it and played bass on up, when you have it in between, a little bit unlike this one because it's muffled on its own, but I've got that end also sounds because you could have hit the string some kind of partial. Both sides of the string sound, it doesn't care, it just got struck, it didn't know you wanted that side to sound. Both of them sound, okay? So there's always some kind of cloth to mute the portion that the string that you didn't want to sound. So you'll see listing cloth woven in there. And no, if we took it out, it would not get louder, okay? That's a common thing. All that cloth is making a bunch of noise. Had an instrument come in, like the famous old one and so forth, and some family back 80 years ago decided all that cloth in there is making it too quiet, and they just ripped it out. And then it was at that point when you hit every string in there, when you hit, it had two different sounds. One on that side, one on this side, all the way through. And it stayed that way for 80 years. It doesn't play any good. Okay, for this. So that's always a feature, it'll be there. You can't have too much, but that's finer gradations. So with the idea that we're gonna have as in the guitar here, as you get higher, the frets what?
Closer.
Get closer together, okay? So there's no way to make what we're used to seeing as straight keys, right? Pluck in their respective places and have the intervals be right, okay? So you're gonna see what's called cranking in these keys. You can start the bass and then after a while, I've got this interval for this note and the next one's this close together, the next one's this close together and so forth down like that. And then you can see the keys going like this, so they can get to the right places they need to on the string. So that's a feature. You won't notice it so much in this unfretted one, because it doesn't need, it's, each one's got its own. But that instrument there and this instrument there are both what they call double fretted. Every natural is fretted with its accidental of the common things. C and C sharp, E with E flat, then use a D sharp, F to F sharp, G to G sharp, B to B flat. Okay, and that saved five pairs of strings per octave. So you can have an instrument that was shallower for the same number of notes for this. Okay, like I once I have said strings and I say a pair of strings. From the very beginning of a clavichord, it was always a pair of strings. What other instruments in Baroque period had pairs of strings?
Harpsichords.
Sometimes. That became the dominant thing. Yes. Any other instrument?
Flute.
Flute, exactly. Flute was always paired strings. What else? Okay, anything else? We whalers, same kind of thing. You had two. Now, you think that, oh, adding a second string is going to make it twice as loud. No. It makes it 3 decibels louder. That's all. Okay, and you can just strike the string a lot louder than that, much louder. The reason for the pairs of strings in the lutes, okay, in the free whalers, in these instruments, in modern pianos. Anybody have a single strung piano?
No.
Okay, it's because of having 2 or more strings together when they're struck, plucked, or hammered, they never vibrate exactly together because it's always slightly detuning, a little bit different tension in the string and so forth, so they get struck and they start together, but then they start, they're always vibrating very, very, very close to the same pitch. But when one starts to die out, the other, it puts energy to the other one, and it couples back and forth. So you always have a bit more complex sound and a much longer sustain when you have pairs of strings. Mid-20th century, you had clavichords being made with 1 string per. But it was a simpler sound. It plucked, and then it died away. It didn't have something else to couple with to give you a nice, smooth, singing kind of a sound, which is what we're going to be ending up with here. Okay, so we've got the basic things, pairs of strings, fretting, and so forth for this. Struck, and your finger, by extension, is when you push the key down, this comes up and strikes the string, there's your energy to make it vibrate. But it's still in contact after that, okay? And so if you press harder on the key, what happens? You're stretching the string, right? Like I did on the guitar here. So you can affect the pitch. I can hit a note and raise it a little bit if I want to. Or I can hit a note and then it's like a vibrato. We call it a ba-boom most of the time. It's a vibrato kind of a sound you can put in there, okay? It's also a way of striking the string, get the note established, and then just slowly massage it, and it helps to keep the note going out longer, okay? Pianos can't do it, harpsichords can't do it, and I don't know any other keyboard, even electronics, it might have some built in to have wah-wah in it, but that's something else, okay? So those are features you have here. And when they added those more strings to the single string, the monochord, to help do things, the bass strings are always in front. So you'll see all these instruments, the longest sounding lengths are in the front, and you work back to the treble. Well, since the, anybody want to guess which one is the bass key? Right, the short one, because it's playing strings closer to you. And the treble key has to reach all the way to the back of the instrument to play that. So on pianos, if you ever look inside, they're all the same length, okay? These, they aren't, okay? And there's good reason to keep it that way, too. There's also a case here, there's a little bit difference in what? Heft to it. This may be shorter, but it's thicker. This one is longer, but it's thinner. And it's all a way of controlling the weight of what's striking the strings and helping your finger support that note to be a good bridge. If you play very lightly, if you help, you have a chance to do in a while, very light touch on the key, you not support the string enough, you can get kind of a weak tone, or even a buzzing tone sometimes. So it's very unusual that you actually have to support that string. But then on the other hand, you get to feel the string through, and you get a chance to manipulate the pitch. So it's more control. And if you went from the old agambas had frets, right? They all had frets. Made it easy to, once you got a tune, you had a reliable note every time. But for some reason, they did away with the frets, which meant now you had to sort of memorize, muscle memorize where that note was. But you gained something else too, right? What can't you do very well on a fretted viola da gamba that violinists do all the time?
Vibrato.
You can't vibrato. You can't change the pitch at all. Okay, so it is more difficult thing to control, but obviously that was the one that continued because that was another valuable musical quality to the music, and rather than keeping with frets of the other instruments for that, okay? And there are actually plucked string instruments that don't have frets like lutes. Original ouds have no frets, And they can do all kinds of microtones if they want to, if they know what they're doing and so forth. You can't do that on a loop. So it's pluses and minuses. You can get additional qualities to manipulate, to express the music across, but then you have to learn how to control it. Okay. Usually in the early instruments, they were rectangular. They were just parallel strings across in the box, and the playing part of the keys stuck out in front. Okay, and all the strings were tuned in unison. Okay, you had the listing cloth out, all you had to do was pluck each string, tune it to the same pitch, right? Stick the cloth back in, and then from then on, the keys just made the different sounding links. Really easy to tune, okay? But also kind of limiting after a while, too, when they had to move on. So there's changes through. Eventually, if you get more and more strings, it gets wider and wider. Somebody figured out to take the strings, if you cocked them sideways, they went at an angle. The bass keys to treble keys were closer in length, instead of having one this short and one this short, like you see at harpsichords, virginals also with harpsichords, they have to reach all the way to the back string, all the way to the front string. If you tilt them, you even that out some. You also, with the soundboard in there, you have a little bit more soundboard room with the keys tucked in. So this allowed some more possibilities that wasn't possible. And it also created a big disadvantage, which they never went back from, was when you put strings across a square rectangular device at an angle, it twists it. Okay? It's a twist into it. A parallel string is no problem. They were built very, very lightly, actually, too, in keeping with other things, but they were lightly because they were just putting pressure on the ends evenly. Okay? And so all these ones that were lightly built like that, but when they went to that, they started making them heavier. And heavier meant you had to have a little heavier strings, and you had to change the action, a little more key weight, and it went on and on a bit. But they never went back to try to get to the ones that wouldn't twist. So all these instruments, this one's got a camouflage, there's a screw up on this thing, so there is a twist in it, a little bit, they all do it. It's just a degree. If it's too much, then there's something else going on, but they won't have that. But it's too much, all the advantages of doing that are not to be given up. So we've got more equal length strings, larger soundboard area, and then they went from quadruple fretted to triple fretted to double fretted, and ranges you can see are from a short octave C to G2 and all the way up to the late 18th century Swedish ones, CC to C4, six octaves. That was a period they were sort of vying with forte pianos and all the literature was expanding and so on. So we've got essentially a unique action, what it can do, that you are not just activating the string, you are also forming and support. So because of that uniqueness from the piano, the harpsichord, and the keyboard organ, you can't do that either, I guess. And you have a unique ability to express on clavichord. By the time we got into the 18th century, these things had been refined enough with understanding weighting of keys and this kind of thing to get each note to be more resonant. The pair of strings would be able to sustain even longer and more fully. And going from a practice instrument initially for general keyboard music, you got in and even it seeped into an instrument that was very expressive. And was even, although it did accompany singers and viols at times and so forth from engravings that we have, but it got to, as in the words here, most, I'll quote an attribute here, the recognition of the clavichord's special abilities before the beginning of the century was not recognized. It was just a keyboard instrument. If you had a keyboard, harpsichord, organ, you played it. No music was specifically composed for it before the 18th century. And at that time, a large body of music written particularly for the clavichord or alternatively for the clavichord and now relatively new fortepiano began to be composed in Germany, where the clavichord was still common. So by this time, actually, England who used it, France, Spain, Italy, Portugal had it. It had all sort of come back, and Germany was the main place that still kept that. And that became a good important crossing with the Empfindungssammlung expression of music and so forth, which is coming up. And a quotation, although the clavichord is par excellence, a solo instrument on which one plays by oneself, for oneself, it was also used in the 18th century to accompany solo singing. that is specially cited in this connection by the writers of the period and on the title pages of several song collections. And we'll be getting to that with the performance here, with the various accolades and poems that were written to, for, and about the clavichord for what it could do to express things. At the end of the handout there, there's a list of the number of clavichord societies in the world, which is probably astounding to most of you. And there's also a list of references. And one of the books is here, which you can look at and see some of the various pictures and so forth that's mentioned in here. It's an excellent source for iconography, documents, of that nature, of the workings and the whys. No. Okay? He's an excellent scholar, but he never put one together and doesn't understand that stuff. So there is a major book review written about that, which can caution you, but the rest of the resources in the book is quite good. But there hasn't been a book, proper book written about the actual how it works. Not that most people are interested in that anyway. So I hope you get a chance to, when you're going to move on now.
Can you try some of the instruments and at 2:00 we'll have the recital. So
when you get a chance here, you've got, this is the Reed Early Keyboard Collections clavichord. It's based on 1784 Hubert model, which is double fretted. Okay, you can't play the C with the C sharp because you're not going to hear the C sharp. It's the shorter fret on that. And that one back there is also modeled on Hubert, and you'll find differences even though they're modeled on the same thing. Not all copies of Stradivarius sound like Stradivarius, but it's a starting point for that. Little things here and there, things are still being discovered. What was important to them as a musical instrument and so on, so it's still being worked on. And the one over there was built by somebody who was associated with the Metropolitan Museum of Art in their collection a bunch of years ago. It was built in 1977, and it's his interpretation of, I'm not sure which model for that. It is smaller like these two, but it is unfretted. There is a pair of strings for every note. So for a lot of people, it would be easy to go into that. You don't have to have a funny snarly sound. But do try all of them around, I would suggest, for this. Do remember the longer and shorter, and the fact that when you have the shorter ones, the ratio is tighter, because you get larger strings, more massive, it gives you more control to have that short lever. But if you see the treble ones, and it's even more extreme than this, you've got this to this. So this is actually going to be moving much faster when you push down the same amount. You have a much faster, which means you put more energy into this, the weaker, thinner string, okay, to help get energy back into it. But if you have this kind of leverage down there with a weak string, wow, you didn't want it, okay? So that's all been carefully mapped out. And you also have much thinner, because faster moving keys, you need less mass for this. So feel the difference. And that's one thing Keith Jarrett, a number of years ago, put a double album out, improvisations he composed. It was actually for Japanese documentary, but his subtitle on that was The Feel of the Strings. Okay, and this is an instrument, keyboard instrument that you can get once you have it, piano or harpsichord. Once it goes up, you have a very brief contact on the harpsichord. You really never get in touch. You sent the piano hammer, to go finish the message or whatever up there. You don't have direct contact. The harpsichord is your in contact. So feel that. Not too extremely, please, okay? Feel your finger pressure, what happens to the note, the speed, what happens, how it sounds with your speed, and so forth. Enjoy, okay?
There's two up here, one up front here. The performance instrument won't be used until the second.